Blog Talk Radio.
I can see clearly now, the rain is gone. I can see all obstacles in my way. Gone are the dark clouds that had me blind. It's gonna be a bright, sunshiny day. Gonna be a bright, sunshiny day. I think I can make it now, the pain is gone. All of the bad feelings have disappeared. Here is that rainbow I've been praying for. It's gonna be a bright, sunshiny day.
Well, good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any comments you would like to make during this broadcast, you can either call them in at area code 646-716-4893, or if you're radio shy, you can email me at bonkay@aol.com. That's bonkaye@aol.com. Before I introduce my very special co-host for tonight, I just want to make an announcement to remind people that we have our California Healing Weekend coming up in September. Yay! I'm really excited about it. I want to be out there with my California girls and my women from all over the world, not just California, but it's going to be a wonderful healing weekend. I'm going to be with old friends, meet some new friends, and the most dynamic women anybody could ask to meet. And the healing weekend is my gift to women who are on their journey to getting better, to feeling fulfilled and whole, to meet other women who can understand exactly what you're going through, and who can have the compassion and the empathy that other people don't have because they don't understand. It's not that they don't sympathize with you or feel bad for you, but the women that have gone through this understand exactly what you're going through and how you're feeling. So that's the most wonderful thing. We have an inexpensive hotel right by the airport, so you can take a transport right there. It's a free van service, trying to keep all the costs down, so that women can, you know, afford to come to this. But it'll be a life-changing experience. Every woman who goes to one of the healing weekends, really, their lives change. And we're going to have some speakers at this. That'll be really dynamic. encouraging and helping you in changing also. So if you are interested, we still have time and room. Write to me at bondk@aol.com, and I'll be happy to send you the information about the Healing Weekend. So I also wanted to announce that my newsletter dates have changed. I know that I've had a number of you write to me in the last couple of weeks worried about my monthly newsletter, but just due to time constraints, I've moved it now to the beginning of every month instead of the middle of the month. So my new one will be going out July 1st. It's ready to go. You'll read some interesting articles in there, some that will really make you think and hopefully make you respond, because I've asked for some help in there. And so you can look forward to that in another 2 days. Without further ado, I want to introduce my co-host for tonight, my favorite doctor in any house, Dr. Brian Hooper. Hi, Brian.
Hey, Bonnie. Good to be with you this evening and with the ladies who are listening as well.
Thank you, and even the men who are listening, too.
That's true. We do have some men that kind of stand on the side and listen, and we are glad they do.
Yes, we are, because a lot of the men are trying to do the right thing, and they just don't know where to start or how to
That's
move
right.
ahead to do it, so some of them do listen in also. And if
sure.
you are listening in, men, I do want to remind you that you have Dr. Brian Hooper as one of your best resources. And we'll talk a little bit about that when we're getting closer to the end of the show. So, Brian, how has your month been?
Oh, it's been a whirlwind of activity. It's been really busy, but good, gratifying, and well worth the effort. So how about you?
Just busy, 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 as always, just working and, you know, trying to get a little recreation in. I've been working on a new book that I have coming out that's not related really to this issue. It's a story about my daughter and her journey through her drug-addicted years until her death. And it's a self-help book for parents who have lost children to drugs or who are going through drugs with their children on how to also get the support they need, because unless you go through this particular situation, it's really hard to find the right kind of empathy that you need to get through it. And so that book will be coming out in August. I'll be talking about it more as we're getting closer to the date. My daughter was a lesbian, and that's part of the story. It had nothing to do with her drug addiction, but it was, you know, learning how when you have a child who's gay, you know, when those words come out, how you feel about it. And, you know, when you don't expect this to happen, I'm sure that your parents had to go through the same thing. But it's
yep.
hard for parents, you know, to hear that
yep.
news. And it has nothing
it
to do with being homophobic or anti-gay. I don't know.
It's
I think it's just hard to hear
not
it.
Not what they expected. Right. Not what they expected. Yeah.
Life yeah, I'm
that
not
a lot,
sure why it's so hard.
Pardon me?
I'm saying, why do you think it's so hard to hear those words?
Well, I think that,
as a parent.
I think that parents have certain expectations, and as soon as they hear the word, I'm a lesbian or I'm gay, they know that some of those expectations are simply not going to ever be fulfilled. There are other expectations that can possibly be filled, but immediately when they hear the word, probably many assume that they won't be fulfilled. So it really alters everything that they were expecting and planning for in their own lives. That's understandable.
I think for a number of parents, it's a matter of shame
mm-hmm.
and distaste for the gay life. I'm not saying the gay lifestyle. I'm just saying the gay life. It's
mm-hmm.
a matter of blame. I mean, I've seen all of this happen through the years of my counseling. And I guess that's why it was so surprising to me that for some odd reason I was so blindsided by this when it happened. And
yeah.
thankfully I was in a very good mental place with homosexuality, because certainly I'm the first foremost person to say this is not something you have any control over, and that
right.
people don't
yeah.
choose their sexuality, and that when you're, you know, have a child that's from a gay father or a gay mother, your chances of having a gay child are higher than everybody else's.
Sure. Yeah.
So I shouldn't have been so quite shocked, but it's still like a punch in the stomach thinking, oh, now there's one more problem to have to contend with. you know, that your child has to go through. You know, you're always trying to protect your children, and now they have to face this whole new set of, you know, discrimination from people, you know, being set
right.
apart. And I think that's what really upset me, that my daughter would now, on top of her drug problems, have to, you know, face this. But she was so in tune with it. You know, I felt so good that she came to terms with it much better than her father ever did, and that she was happy with who she was, and that wasn't the cause of her drug use
right.
and her abuse, that she, you know, had a woman friend, you know, the last year, you know, who she loved very much, and this woman loved her. So I was so happy at least I was able to see them find some happiness, even if it, you know, didn't last for that long. But
right.
it's a hard thing for parents. I'm sure that, like I say, your parents probably went through that too, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah. It's concern for the child and concern for themselves as well and what this means and just having to kind of wrap their minds around it, you know, they weren't planning on it. So it's all of that together. I'm looking forward to reading it when you're done with that, writing it.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been a very hard book to write. Because, you know, I have to drag myself through it again. But my daughter left a lot of writing behind. And it's very painful writing, but it was my hopes that, you know, maybe if some people read what she wrote, that maybe one person's life can be saved, you know, through her writing.
Right.
And I share her writings, you know, and they're kind of, like I say, really harsh to read and sad to read. And it's just such a hard struggle for parents who go through this. And I think that I was talking to my aunt today, and I know I lost my brother to a 20-year drug habit. And reliving it again through my daughter, it was, like, unbelievable that, you know, how could this be happening? She used to be on that committee for drugs against, you know, for the kids, you know, DARE. And she saw how my brother's death affected our whole family. And, you know, how my mother fell apart over it. So you think that kids see this at a young age, that they learn something from it, but I think they make that disconnect. I'm not sure. You know, they don't really necessarily feel that's going to be them, or they're not thinking about it at all when it happens. But it's a tough world we live in, and drugs affect so many people that cross all boundaries.
Drugs and alcohol are a big problem, I will say, also in the gay community. A much higher percentage of alcoholism in the gay community among gay men than there is in the general population as well. So it's one of the one of the issues that I know that the in here where I live, the Tennessee Equality Project is working on to begin to address that issue in our community, and it's a very important one.
I know that my daughter was very active in the gay recovery movement when she was sober, when she was clean. You know, she went through different periods of that. You know, she went to different events and she spoke for them. And she was at the gay pride parade for the recovery. You know, so I know that there is a lot of, you know, drugs and alcohol within the gay community because of the fact of the discrimination. You know, I've dealt with so many men who turned to this because they couldn't deal with the lives they were living and the pressures brought on to them by society not to be gay and the self-hatred they went through and to try to escape it. And, you know, it certainly is a struggle for all gay people, and I can definitely appreciate that.
Yeah, and within the gay community, too, people who have had that kind of societal prejudice wielded against them then tend to treat each other in ways that aren't healthy because they don't know, in many cases, really healthy behavior. And I'm not speaking for all, I'm speaking for some. That's the case. Drugs become a way of connecting with people, but ultimately it leaves them disconnected. It becomes a way to try to deal with pain, but ultimately it causes more pain.
Okay, well, I'm kind of losing you, Brian. I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is that better now?
Yes, that's better.
All right. Very good.
But it's true. It's been traditionally a...
It sounds a little bit like you're in a wind tunnel tonight on my end, so I don't know what's going on with our connection, but we'll make the best of it.
Okay, sounds good. No, but I was saying that you know, this is a prevalent problem and has been for many years in the gay community, and there is a large recovery movement. But, you know, it's just sad when you have to be a minority in a world. I see this happening with other minorities also that can't cope with discrimination, so they turn to, you know, drugs to try to numb them or to wipe out that kind of pain.
Right.
And, you know, it's a very sad situation all the way around. And that doesn't negate the pain that our women have to go through not knowing what's going on in their lives. You know, I separate the two.
Right. That's right.
So one thing I don't think has a lot to do with the other, but I did want to mention that there is always a struggle. And that's one
right.
of the things that I mentioned in the book, you know, the struggle that my daughter had to go through. So
right.
I'll keep you posted with that.
Good.
In the meantime, I wanted to talk tonight about two areas that maybe you could help a little bit with. And
okay.
we had discussed a little bit about, you know, an article that recently came out that I sent to you. And it's
mm-hmm.
always coming up in our support group and on our, you know, support chat. And it's about psychopaths. Because many of
yeah.
our women have husbands who are psychopaths.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
that's not necessarily a gay thing. It's just that I think when you are living a lie, that you become more sociopathic, psychopathic, narcissistic. I'm not quite sure of all the words that I can use. But I think that living a lie creates that for many people, because when you start lying and you can't differentiate between the truth anymore, you know, I think that contributes to it, but I'm not sure if it's nature over nurture, if this is something that's created. But I know that many women, you know, feel that this is the kind of person they're married to. So if you don't mind, I'll just give some highlights from this article, and then we can discuss
okay.
them, saying 15 things
sure.
you probably do not know about psychopaths. And
no.
it says that, have you ever worked for someone who you seriously thought might be crazy? About half of all workers have such an experience within their lifetime. The other half misses out on one of life's most perplexing and educational opportunities. The subject is psychopathy. Knowledge and understanding of the psychopathy is now advancing at an accelerating rate after a decades-long period of no growth and slow growth. Good thing. Psychopathy is the very worst mental disorder. Psychopathy and related conditions have caused millions of lives lost and trillions of dollars wasted, though it is still very poorly understood by most people. I am now speaking not as a medical or psychological professional, but as a professional project manager who's been faced with numerous severe personnel management problems and addressed in engineering or business school. So this, you know, this came from the business, you know, point of view. But
mm-hmm.
symptoms are all the same. It says a psychopath is a person with a very nasty personality who builds a more attractive and very fake personality to cover his frauds, transgressions, and sometimes murders. A representative sample of people psychologically assessed with psychopaths include Casey Anthony, who allegedly killed her daughter, John Wayne Gacy, who murdered and sodomized 33 young men, and who was executed, and Jeff Skilling, who was CEO of Enron, who was destroyed in the largest corporate fraud case in history. So, you know, that's starting briefly, that a psychopath is a person who has a fake personality to cover his fraud and transgressions and sometimes, you know, really bad behavior. It says that they're really rational. Psychopaths are quite rational. Psychopaths' minds work no better and no worse than yours, except that psychopaths have a big void where most people have a conscience and moral values. In a family setting, a psychopath typically abuses the spouse and children and is respected and even well thought of by outsiders. In a working environment, psychopaths choose their victim from lower-ranking individuals and take care to act properly around higher-ranking individuals. In the national and international relations, psychopaths create and exploit divisions based on ethnic, religious, national, or class differences. Talks about mental disorders. The primary indicators for psychopathy are antisocial personality disorder and malignant narcissism personality disorder, plus tendencies towards criminal behaviors and inability to establish mature sexual relationships. and talks about measurement, how to measure it, how to control it. Psychopaths want to control you physically, emotionally, sexually, financially, and politically. Psychopaths want to control your soft drinks, your ability to defend yourself, your health care, and your life. And they say that psychopaths are thought to be about only 1% of the population. You know, they name some of the other causes, flavors and stuff. So I'm kind of curious if you could tell me anything, the difference as far as, like, psychopath versus, let's say, a sociopath.
Yeah. Well, a couple of things I guess I want to start with is that these are ways of talking about clusters of behavior. And currently, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual that's used by psychologists, psychiatrists, marriage and family therapists, clinical social workers, etc., refer to what you're talking about as antisocial personalities, rather than talking about sociopaths or psychopaths. But even in the antisocial part, you get the message. We're talking about the same thing. So the official diagnosis today is antisocial personality disorder. But still, that's just what's in this edition right now. It could change with the next edition, okay? So, but I think people should know what's being used in the diagnostic community. But with regard to sociopaths versus psychopaths, it may be, but perhaps, this is my way of conceptualizing it now, is being sort of a spectrum. That when I think of a psychopath, I think of somebody who is, their conscience is steely cold. They really don't have any qualms of conscience doing anything that they need to do to accomplish whatever their particular goal is. Some will say that sociopaths are more people who are created by their environment, where psychopaths, it is a genetic cause to it. You know, I'm not an authority on this. I don't know.
Yeah,
that
but they do say that. They do say that it is for the psychopath, just like what you're saying, that for the psychopath, it's more nature versus nurture, whereas for the sociopath, it's more environmental factors.
But the bottom line is, and this is where I come to, the bottom line is, what are the signs that we're looking for? And how do we take care of ourselves in the face of dealing with somebody who may be a sociopath, maybe a psychopath, but basically the behaviors cross over, you know? And what I would say is, if you meet somebody who's very charming, but things very quickly don't begin to fully add up, that's a real sign that you're dealing with somebody with some antisocial kind of behaviors at minimum. If they're ingratiating, they get in good with you, but then you feel manipulated with them, or you feel you can't bring up something because you're going to be rejected, that's a fairly good sign you're dealing with somebody who is coming from an antisocial kind of perspective. Maybe, Bonnie, it might be helpful if I was to read criteria from the latest statistical manual on antisocial personality disorder. But I think that the specifics are things that the listeners could listen for and maybe take a look at the people they're dealing with. Shall I go ahead and do that?
Sure, go right ahead.
Okay. So there are 7 characteristics, and in order to have a diagnosis, 3 of these need to, at least 3 of the 7 need to be endorsed. Okay? In other words, they need to be present. Number 1, failure to conform to social norms with respect to lawful behaviors, as indicated by repeatedly performing acts that are grounds for arrest. Number two, deceitfulness, as indicated by repeated lying, use of aliases, or conning others for personal profit or pleasure. Number three, impulsivity or failure to plan ahead. Number four, irritability and aggressiveness as indicated by repeated physical fights or assault. Number five, reckless disregard for safety of self or others. And I would interpret that to not only physical safety, but say financial safety as well. Number six, consistent irresponsibility as indicated by repeated failure to sustain consistent work behavior or honor financial obligations. Seven, lack of remorse as indicated by being indifferent to or rationalized as having hurt, mistreated, or stolen from another. Now, those are seven important characteristics. Then beyond that, the person needs to at least be 18 years of age, because under 18, they sort of chalk up some of that behavior to being an adolescent and just not having, you know, being fully formed yet. And that usually is some sort of conduct disorder before the age of 15. Finally, the occurrence of antisocial behavior is not exclusively during the course of, say, schizophrenic or bipolar disorder. In other words, it's outside of that, it's apart from that. So when we meet people who are antisocial, doesn't mean that they're psychotic, out of touch with reality. They know very well what it is they're doing, and they do it anyway.
Hmm. Now, let me ask you this. Can this be changed through therapy?
Most therapists would say no.
Okay.
I think it can be managed, but not changed.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, we have people who have antisocial personalities in the military, in law enforcement, and in government. And that's no surprise,
uh-huh,
because it appeals to their ego, to their narcissism, and many of them play just inside the line so as not to get caught. But it's not because they want to do the right thing that they're necessarily people of goodwill. It's just that they don't want to suffer the consequence.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're married, to a sociopath,
right,
to a personality with a person with antisocial personalities disorder, don't
uh-huh
think you're going to change them and have a lovely relationship.
No, even no matter how much you try, it's just not going to be happening. But
that's
how
right
about, what's the difference between that and narcissism, would you say? Would you
yeah
say they're
well
kind of tied in together?
There's often a connection. My sort of general rule of thumb, and hear that as general rule of thumb, most people who are sociopathic in their behavior are narcissistic as well. But not all narcissists are sociopaths.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So narcissists are all about them, themselves, what makes them look special. They often don't believe rules apply to them or that they're special and ought to get accepted to it. But there can be real narcissistic features to people without making them full-blown narcissists. It's
mm-hmm
a feature of maturity, and we tend to see a lot of that in both men and women today who are not yet fully matured, even into their late 20s, early 30s. But that doesn't mean they're without a conscience. Sociopathic behavior, that of people who really don't have conscience, they don't feel badly for what they do. The only thing that
mm-hmm
makes them feel getting caught and suffering the consequence. So, you know, you may have people who are sort of self-centered, everything's around me, they're not thoughtful about your time and all, but they may have a constant default of that haven't come up yet.
Well, I think that a lot of the women that I work with, they definitely feel narcissism is a problem. You know, that their husbands are really into putting themselves first. You know, their needs come first. I just find a lot of times there's a lot of this stuff that's really interrelated. Not so much the psychopath, but more the sociopath. I think psychopaths are more dangerous than sociopaths. They're more violent by nature. And that's not to say that some of our women don't have domestic violence in their relationships. They do. But I would say the majority of them have more of emotional abuse than they have physical abuse.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some men who have no conscience whatsoever. And I've seen this by their interactions with their wives. You know, it's not bad enough that the marriage has to end, but then they have to go and torture them.
Yeah.
You know, and that's really the problem. You know, they can't let go. And instead of just saying, you know, I'm sorry it worked out this way. You know, I didn't intend for it to happen this way. You know, let's just try to move on and, you know, work this out so we have children or whatever the case is. But that's not what happens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have to just keep pushing to try to take away everything. And for some of them, it's really a control issue, and I don't think it has anything really to do with being gay.
It's a function of the narcissism, the need that high level of control and to come out as the victor, you know, rather than just moving on with their lives. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I do believe, though, that, I mean, tell me what you think. If you have to live a lie every day of your life, do you think that changes your personality where you can become sociopathic?
Well,
I think that could be part of where that's different, where you're not, it's not a nature versus nurture. You're not born like that, but because of all the environmental things around you, making you feel like you have to lie.
So, you know, I just distinguish, and many clinicians do, between traits and features. Traits go to the core, whereas features can be ameliorated. They can be recognized and altered. People can recognize they're being self-serving. I do believe if we lie every day and we manipulate a little here and a little there, it's very easy to do that everywhere with everyone. But oftentimes that then will finally result in a meltdown for folks. Something gets exposed and they have a great fall. And the people who are healthy underneath it all can reclaim themselves. Those who are unhealthy underneath it will sit in continued self-serving behavior and believe that they're really above it all.
Mm-hmm. I just feel that when people lead lives that are really compartmentalized, you know, because they're living in two different worlds, that this has to somehow influence, you know, how they are as people.
Of course it does.
I don't necessarily think they were born this way, but I think that from having to live in a world that's not real versus a world that's totally authentic, that you create these kinds of situations. Do you think it's possible?
Oh, absolutely. It happens all the time. Absolutely. And then they have this untenable situation where they're trying to live one version of their life, and because constitutionally they're not wired that way, and they can't repress that any longer, it starts coming up. They live double lives, and you know, instead of having a mistress, they've got a mister on the side, that is gay men who end up being married. you know, and you and I have talked about this. Oftentimes they don't really begin to leave the relationship until there's somebody special in their life. And that's when they begin to leave. And, you know, the more healthy men will come clean with their wives and admit this and try to have a collegial or a you know, cooperative divorce. And the ones who are not as well-tempered will try to make it her fault.
Well, no, it's really a sad situation, and quite frankly, the more, you know, the more I learn about it over the years, I just can't imagine living a life that's not mine to live. I'm not saying people can't fake it and people can't make it, but why would they want to, number one? I mean, I understand all the social, you know, variables surrounding that, but I can't imagine living a life that wasn't my life every day of my life. I can't imagine going to sleep at night feeling miserable and then waking up miserable because I'm not who I am. Or what I want is not what I have. And what I'm getting is not what I'll ever want. Because I'm not strong enough to do what's right.
And what woman would want to try to keep a man in that kind of relationship, right? I mean, when we think about it, you wouldn't want to try to keep a man like that connected to you, would you, Bonnie? It wouldn't make any sense.
Well, I think some of our women are just hang on because they lack, you know, the ability to make sound decisions when you're living in a world where you're always questioning yourself to start with.
Right.
So that's the problem when you lose your self-esteem and you don't, you know, have a person, you just become a dish rag. You know, you can't make decisions for yourself. And it's really interesting because I see some of our women, if you would see them, Brian, it's like so amazing. They're like model quality, movie star quality. They're beautiful women who I would probably give at least, I don't know, maybe 7 years off of my life to look like them. Because I know that if I did, I'd probably be on Broadway acting or something. But these are gorgeous women who really have not had sex in like 20 years because their husbands don't want to touch them, and they're still questioning, well, what am I doing wrong? You know, that in itself shows me that you're so you just have everything taken away from you, and you just don't think you're worthy of having anything more. You know, so I can see where you can become codependent on somebody for other factors. Or like a number of my women have said, well, I thought if I stuck in there long enough, I could fix it. I could fix him. No, you can't fix him.
No.
It's not like he's broken and you can just glue him together and he's going to be straight. You know, it's not a straight model to start with.
No,
but
as long
women
as you
just keep trying.
Let me just point something out. You know, I'm glad you said that. At one point in time, it wasn't very long ago, it's been since during my lifetime that the American Psychiatric Association and Psychological Association both determined that being gay in and of itself is not a mental disorder. But there still have been psychotherapists who have tried to change people's sexual orientation. And even though all of the major professional groups, psychological associations, clinical social workers, even the Academy of Pediatricians, as well as ASA, they've all come out against to try to change people. I still, just as in the last 2 weeks, got a piece of mail that came to me about an outfit with licensed clinicians that are promising that they can help change people's sexual orientation. And it's bogus.
Uh-huh.
It offers a false promise, and it's shaming to gay and lesbian people because it tells them there's something simply wrong with them to change. And it also gives, I'm afraid, women who are married to gay men the idea that, well, if he could just the right there, he could get changed and we could make it work. And I'm here to say it ain't going to work. can fake it. He can get support to try to fake it. But do you want to live with that? I don't think so.
Well, I don't think so, and you don't think so. But the fact is that there are some people who really do think so. And
right.
I do believe that your cultural and religious background really play big parts in this. My
right.
heart goes out most of all to the women who come to me from other cultures and religions where
mm-hmm.
there are no choices with this. I mean, this is not something you have a choice in. If you have a gay husband, first of all, if he's gay, he has to become a husband. It doesn't matter. And
right.
if things aren't working out, well, then it's your fault. Because you're supposed to fix this situation up. That's what these cultures believe.
An example of this is that I won't, you know, give any identifiers, but I've been contacted in the last month by both a woman and a man from another country, another culture, where there are arranged marriages. And she contacted me about her husband, who didn't want to have sex with her, and this other gentleman, not married to the same woman, but married to somebody else, that he was forced into this marriage, and he doesn't know what to do because he's not at all attracted to her, and yet there were, you know, emotional blackmail kind of threats for me to try to put him together with this woman. Just unconscionable, but prevalent in the culture.
I know, it's so sad when you think of all the countries and the cultures of people who have no choices, and I always tell that to the men who are here, you know, we have choices.
Right.
I'm not saying they're easy choices to make, but you're not going to get killed for it. When you
right.
take a look at what's going on, for instance, in Uganda, which is a faraway
yes.
country, but gay is illegal there. You know, it's
right.
more illegal than ever now.
Of
and
course.
There are other countries where it's totally unaccepted. In the Muslim religion, in the, you know, fundamentalist Jewish religion or fundamental Christian religion, it doesn't matter. It's still not allowable. I'm not to say there's another, you know, if you're not fundamentalist, you can't find it. But under fundamental Christians, and you know, it's just not allowable. And in fact, you know, in some religions, it's and I can sit and argue this from now until forever with these people who are religious, but nobody's given me an inch. I mean, they're really settled in their way of thinking.
Yes, I know. I end up dealing with the fallout of that, Bonnie, when they come to me.
I know. How do you change this?
And, I don't think we change it by trying to get the religion to change. The only thing we can do is continue to deal with one person at a time, and in the broader society where we do have freedom to legislate rights for people, to make sure that we make sure everybody has equal rights throughout our society, because that does send the message to all people, even those who are living in those religious systems. It tells them the broader society around them doesn't agree with them. And I know that some simply redouble their effort against the broader society, but because I'm on your talk show with you, and because I'm making it known to my community that I'm approachable on this issue, I do have people from fundamentalist groups coming to me and saying, I'm in this marriage, I shouldn't be, I don't know what to do, how do I process from here?
Mm-hmm.
And I understand the religious perspective they come with because, you know, because of my training in theology, because of my own experience, I can help them face that and see different ways of looking at their faith tradition, at least in the one that I'm part of. And but I'm, you know, also able to help other people in other faith traditions to look at it a little differently. So I think what we do is work together to provide safe places for people to come and think outside of their very limited boxes.
No, it's just so hard to change a world. I mean, there are places where we can't even think about changing. but at least within this country where people can make choices and not have to suffer as much for it, you know, you're always going to face the prejudice. I don't care how many years you talk about down the line. You know, there will always be people who are prejudiced against gay people. And that's just the way it is, but you learn to live with it. Look, I'm Jewish, and there's certainly plenty of people who hate Jews, but, you know, I don't let it take over my life. You know, I still, you know, cope every day to day. I'm just aware of it, that, you know, in many places I'm not welcomed, or I'm made to feel like I'm very unwelcomed. But, you know, I try to stay away from those places and try to stay in places that are safe.
Yes,
but,
right.
You know, that could be for any minority, be it gay, be it black, be it Latino. You know, our society still hasn't stepped up to the plate in this country. It's gotten better, but it's still rough, you know, for people who are different. And, you know, my heart goes out to anyone who has to survive in a society where you're discriminated against, but I still feel that being true to yourself is always the best route to go. That
it's
easy to hide who you are, but living a lie is so much more difficult.
Absolutely.
Do you feel that way,
you
know, too?
Absolutely. I just had this conversation with somebody else, and I said, who is deeply religious, and I said, listen, the you that you are deep down inside, the you that you are inside is the you that God knows, is the you that God loves, and it's the you that God wants to see make good choices. So let's take off all this pretend stuff and deal with the real you that's deep down inside. And if you don't have a relationship with your true self deep down inside, you really can't have a relationship with anyone else. The most important relationship you can have, ultimately, is with yourself, because unless you've got that, you can't be available to God or anyone else. And that they seem to get it, you know, when I put it to them that way. So really, to be honest with God and others starts with being honest with oneself.
That's where I think the problem is, that a lot of people can't be honest with themselves, which makes me want to bring up another subject with you, since you are, you know, part of the pastoral counseling.
But hold on a second. Is it that they can't or they won't? Because they're coming from a place of fear.
Probably both. Probably they can't because they won't for that reason. I'm sure they're scared.
They're
and I don't blame them. I mean, I have sympathy.
I
really do.
But sometimes when we ask, well, what's the worst thing you can think of? And I did that with somebody just this week. I said, well, now what's the worst thing? And they would tell me, and I'd say, would be bad because, and then they would tell me, and that would be bad because, they would tell me. Well, we finally went down that rabbit hole far enough that they realized that the ultimate worst thing that could happen wouldn't be all that bad. You know, they wouldn't stop breathing, they wouldn't be drowning, they wouldn't be eating, they wouldn't be out on the street. What they were really fearing was other people's rejection of them. And I said, well, they're already rejecting you because they're only accepting a false you anyway.
That's a really good way to look at it.
Yeah. So give them, you know, let them know what it is they're rejecting. And then move on with your life. Maybe they'll end up loving you. But at least they'll know the you that you are. Anyway, I interrupted you. You wanted to ask me a question
about... No, that's fine. And also the fact that you can mention that even if they do reject him, you know, or to anyone you speak to in the future, that is a possibility. But think of all the new friends you'll be having by being honest.
Well, exactly. Including themselves. They can be friends with themselves.
Absolutely. That comes number one. But what I was going to bring up before, it's in my newsletter coming out, you know, in 2 days. And I have this article, and it is really disturbing to me, because when you talk about religion and how it influences people, one of our women, who I'm very close with, she's part of our support network, she said I could write this article. It really disturbs me, it disturbs her, that her husband, after, you know, she got divorced, rather than come to terms with who he is, even though he has HIV from his activities, that he right away, because he refuses to admit that he's gay to anyone, he went on Christian Mingle. And he met a girl. They're going with each other now, or engaged with each other. And of course she has the dilemma of telling her or not telling her, staying back or whatever the case is. But I just like to warn women that, you know, when you move in your next, you know, venture out there, that you have to watch out for these things, you know. And I say in my newsletter that with Christian Mingle, I don't look at it like Match.com or, you know, eHarmony, where you have a lot of game players and stuff, you know, and everybody's trying to be somebody they're not or saying they are. But with, you know, there's just the, you know, the way it touches me, Christian Mingle, you would like to think at least people have some kind of holy belief there with God being Christian, that they wouldn't be lying about this kind of stuff. I mean, exaggerating is one thing. You can throw an extra inch on your height. But to lie about your sexuality, and especially when you're already infected. And I think this is a place where those men who are in such a deep denial, once again, when they started off with women before who were Christians, because they could do it, because good Christian women aren't looking for premarital sex, it's easy to make sure that, you know, you don't get too physically involved and the woman won't be suspicious. She'll think it's good because, you know, she wants to be a good Christian and you're not pushing her. So this is kind of like a good hiding place for those kind of men. So I just wanted to know your thoughts on that.
Well, okay. First of all, I'll let you know, although I am a Christian, I am a pastor, I do serve part-time in a church, I'm always suspicious of anything that's too religious. And so I have seen an awful lot of self-deception by Christians then turns into deception of other people. So even if somebody isn't a gay man who's pretending to be straight on there, I would just say to folks, remember, it's the human condition that we tend to be a bit self-deceptive, curious, Christians and non-Christians alike. So let me just put that out there, okay? I know that sounds a little cynical, but maybe that comes from my Northern European Lutheran roots, where, you know, we understand that sort of the root of sin is it's all about self-deception and turning in on oneself and making oneself into a God figure rather than trusting in the spot. Now, let me move beyond that. All I would say is, remember, no matter what the matching situation is, if it's Match.com or Mingle or eHarmony or any of those, people put out there, I would say most people put out there what they believe to be true about themselves. It may or may not be. And those places are good to figure out exactly if you don't want to have a candidate. And the ones that have profiles that do look like they're interesting, take it with a healthy grain of salt. Keep your antennae up, because people can be dispersed anyway. And it does surprise me that you have a friend who has an ex-gay husband, I mean an ex-husband gay, who's on there trying to deceive somebody else, because he's probably trying to deceive himself as well. So,
yeah,
anyway.
That's really sad. Really sad that you go in there with good intentions as a woman looking to meet a nice Christian guy. And somebody's doing this and not telling you about the HIV also. I mean, that's also a secret.
Of course. But let me say something else, too. Because I think, you know, fundamentalist Christian folks are likely to be more drawn to a site like that. We have heard that even if a man has been married before, if he comes from a fundamentalist background and he's gay, he may be saying to himself, well, that's just a temptation, but that's not who I really am inside. All I need to do is meet a Christian woman, all will be well. So I would be, I would still be careful, you know, no matter, even if it was married once before. You follow me on that?
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I just think that it's a matter that women in general just have to be careful because, you know, when you go into the new world of dating, it's totally different than maybe when you were dating 25 years ago. And that, you know, you find all kinds of players out there. You know, I tell women that gay husband recovery takes time. You know, you have to first learn who you are. Then you have to learn how you allowed this to happen to yourself so you don't have it happen again in a different way.
That's right.
You know, it doesn't have to be in a gay way, but you can meet guys who are other kinds of, you know, people that you wouldn't want to be married to. And I think that if you're the kind of woman who loves too much or gives too much, you know, you're just already set up for a bad relationship because in life, as you know, Brian, there are givers and takers, and they each need each other because the givers have to give to someone and the takers have to take. But you have to have some kind of balance, or otherwise you're never going to be able to have, you know, any kind of happiness in any relationship, no matter how many people you meet and marry, right?
That's right. That's right.
So I think that's the key to being happy in the future is learning to love yourself enough first. That you won't let somebody take who you are away from you.
That's right.
That you can say right away, I'm not going to do this. You know, if you're going to be like that, then I'm not going to stay with you. I think we stay with people too long, you know, trying to change them and trying to think, well, they're going to get better. They never get better. You have to just give up and walk ahead.
Yep.
You know, when people say, well, I made a commitment, I made a vow with my marriage, how can I walk away from it? Tell them what you always say, Brian.
You didn't sign up for this, did you? You don't have to stay with something you sign up for, you know. It's one thing for a straight man or a straight woman to have an affair and come to grips with that and have their existential crisis. I think that's salvageable, not always, but sometimes. And relationships even be stronger beyond that. But to try to think that's possible with somebody who's ultimately gay, I would say no, don't give up on that relationship. Dust yourself off, find your wounds up, so on. Hey, Bonnie, I want to give a recommendation for a book that I think might be helpful for your listeners.
Okay, please do.
And this is going to seem a little strange. It's really written for people who are coming out of addiction to drugs or alcohol, but the principles in this about relationships are so good that I'm going to be, as I'm reviewing this, I'm going to be recommending it to folks who have never struggled with alcohol and drugs because it just talks about really healthy relationships. So here's the title of the book. It's called Stage 2 Relationship. The subtitle is Love Beyond Addiction. And the author's name is Larson. Stage 2 relationship, Love Beyond Addiction. I happened to pick this up when I was touring an addiction facility recently. I'm not sure why I hadn't seen it before. And I just think it's really quite excellent. Little book, only 120 pages long, but very based on how relationships work and what makes healthy relationships healthy. Good, good stuff. And I want to just give a shout out for that.
All right.
No,
thank you so much for that.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
So, Brian, it's the end of another show.
Oh, my gosh. We've already reached that hour, haven't we, dear? All right.
I know. You think it went fast because I'm getting old?
Well, it went fast for me, too, and I don't know.
Okay, I feel better hearing that. I definitely do. To all of our listeners, I hope you have a wonderful July 4th holiday. And I bet you that this whole month will go really fast. And before you turn your head around, it's going to be Dr. Brian Hooper week, which always makes us feel so much better when we hear him. And I really do appreciate you, Brian. And I appreciate all the time you give to our women. You can contact him at drbrianhooper.com, correct?
That's right. Or just go to your website and they'll find a link to mine, won't they?
Yeah, go to my links and you'll find Dr. Brian Hooper there. Or just write to me at bondk@aol.com if you want to get in touch. One way or another, you'll find him. Just look and I'll make sure you get there. All right, Brian, thank you so much for everything as always.
Hey,
and I'll be talking
you.
To you again in a few weeks, okay?
Okay. Love you. Have
All
a good
right,
night.
All right, thanks a lot. Love to everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.